Good morning and welcome to up-to-date special coverage, Coronavirus in Kansas City. I'm Steve Kraske. This morning, a look at the world of sports. What are sports journalists supposed to do in the age of COVID-19? Later, Gina Coffin will be in to discuss the digital divide in this era of a coronavirus and how the current crisis might further separate the haves from the have-nots. But first, the news and the latest on Kansas City Mayor Quentin Lucas's ban on gatherings of more than 10 people and new restrictions on restaurants and bars. With us is KCUR Sam Zeff. Sam, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Sam, what's the latest on all this?
Well, it's not just Quentin Lucas. It's not just Kansas City.
That's right.
This ban on gatherings of more than 10 people. They're calling it the core four now: Kansas City, Jackson County, Johnson County, and Wyandotte County. Looks like bars and restaurants, if that's what you frequent, you're going to have to find something else to do. As you know, Steve, the news is breaking late, and it's like a tsunami being shot out of a cannon trying to keep up with this. Not long after that ban, we heard about schools in the Kansas City area, all 14 districts. Those are going to be out until at least April 3rd. Right after that, the six Johnson County school districts also decided to stay out until at least April 3rd. That's a Friday. They'll reevaluate at that time. Having schools closed, restaurants and bars being closed, could extend for weeks, if not months.
This is going to be a new day for a lot of folks in Kansas City, Sam.
Boy, it sure is. You know, it seems to me that restaurants that do a big takeout business may be able to maintain. We just heard this morning that the company that owns Hen House grocery stores looking to hire displaced restaurant workers. So people are mobilizing. There's things that people are trying to do to mitigate the damage to this. But as you know, Steve, we're very early on in this process. How it's all going to play out is a mystery at this point.
You know, Sam, you mentioned the four core counties. You did not mention Clay and Platte counties, and I can't help but wonder, where are they in all this whole mix here?
Well, that's another mystery, and we're looking into that. We don't know what is happening in Clay or Platte counties right now. We assume that the school districts up there, because they are part of the Kansas City city limits, are following what we heard yesterday. As for bars, restaurants, other retail establishments in those two counties north of the river, looking into that right now.
Yeah, I was going to say we're trying to reach out to officials up there to get up to speed on what's happening there. That's KCUR Sam Zeff. Sam, always appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Now a conversation about the world of sports and sports journalism in the time of COVID-19. Joining us are Vahe Gregorian. He's a sports columnist for the Kansas City Star. Vahe, nice to see you again.
Good to see you, Steve. Thanks.
Marlia Campbell is a sports director for WIBW-TV in Topeka. She happens to be a former up-to-date intern, and she joins us via Skype from her home in Topeka. Marlia, nice to have you. And also with us is Greg Eklund, who covers sports for KCUR. Greg, good morning to you.
Top of the morning to you.
Marlia, I can't help but wonder if there isn't a certain level of panic for a sports columnist and sports reporters and sports broadcasters at a time like this when there's no sports to cover.
You know, I think this is an unprecedented time for everyone, and certainly for us with, you know, nothing to cover in our job description. But I think, you know, to the contrary, that it's a bigger time for sports journalism than ever. You know, I mean, the games aren't happening, but sports is playing a critical role in, you know, drawing attention to something huge going on in our country right now. So it's a big time to, you know, get to tell these stories.
Vahe, you're a columnist for the Kansas City Star. Is there any sense of panic as you go about doing what you're doing right now?
I don't think panic's the right word, Steve. I do think, as we were chatting earlier, there's a little bit of the sense of call to action for the paper in general, but I think we feel that even in sports. I can tell you that this week and next seem pretty full. I feel like there's a lot of stuff that we're either in the middle of or trying to get into the middle of about how people in the sports world are handling this. Some examples that we find useful for others. I think even, I don't want to be Pollyanna in any way, but I do think there's some inspiring things to be taken from the way some people in sports are handling this. So, it certainly is
athletes
a disorder.
Making donations to absolutely. Testing and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. And look, even I'm sure you guys have discussed this, but it's pretty evident that the tipping point on the proper reaction to all this was last Wednesday when the NBA shut down. That really set off the avalanche in sports world, which I think quite arguably you could say precipitated U.S. government reaction anyway. It certainly preceded it, and I think created a groundswell that's been pretty important.
Have you ever been able to imagine a moment like this in your career?
No.
This is just crazy.
Absolutely. You know? And I think, look, this is kind of funny, but I think we've all gone through this in different ways. It almost seems trite now. A week ago, we're writing about or talking about, there's a possibility they might have to play these tournaments with no fans in the stands. Like, how fascinating will that be? And then a day later, it's like, well, that's pretty old news. Yeah. And I do think we have this constant sort of cascading feeling of stuff just falling around us that we can't even envision a day before.
Yeah. I can't help but point out that your boss, Jeff Rosen, the sports editor at The Star, wrote a column that ran in the paper on Monday that said this, Vahe, unsure, unsettled, unknown. There's no playbook for how a sports department is supposed to operate when the sports are seemingly gone. Sounds about right.
That does sound about right. And one thing we were also chatting about was that feeling of disorientation, right, for all of us, but in our jobs specifically. On Sunday, I ended up just sort of driving around trying to figure out what to do with myself, thinking there might be some stories out there. I drove by a playground that I sometimes go shoot hoops on, and you know, nobody there. Of course, it was 37 degrees, so I didn't want to overstate that symbolism. Yeah. But then I was thinking, I think every Sunday, Selection Sunday since 1989, we've been in that frantic mode of, okay, can't wait to see what happens, yeah. and let's get going. In this case, I'm like, well, should I drive over to Naismith's grave? What should I do?
Yeah. Greg Eklund from KCUR, I'm wondering about you too. You report for this public radio station, but you also work sports for other outlets. How is all this changing your life?
A great deal.
I bet.
Mainly on the TV production side, and I have a lot of friends who work in TV production. And when there are no events, there is no work.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of friends of mine who are just in that waiting mode like all of us are. And I'm sure there's a great concern about the next few weeks and what's to unfold or not.
How
unfold.
About coming up with stories for doing what you do?
I'm along the same lines as Vahe. There are some good stories out there. It's just going to precipitate us to work harder to get them and to present them, because I believe they are out there.
Mm-hmm. Marlia Campbell, I'm wondering what is going on out there. I'm thinking for sports people, at least on the national level, thank goodness for the NFL free agent market right now, because in terms of hard news, I'm not seeing a whole lot else besides that.
Absolutely. And, you know, we had the Tom Brady bombshell this morning. That certainly gave us something to write about.
What
but,
was
you
the
know,
Tom
for us,
Brady?
We're looking a lot about.
Bring our
yeah,
listeners
you know,
up to
Tom
speed
Brady
there.
Announcing on, sure. Yeah. Tom Brady announcing this morning that he'll no longer be with the Patriots. That came on Instagram not too long ago. So I think that's certainly shaking things up a little bit. I know for us, we're talking a lot about, you know, we talk about the stories of athletes during this time. We're looking a lot at seniors. You know, we're having conversations with not just high school seniors, but college seniors about kind of the end of the careers that they had and how they were kind of robbed of a moment that was, you know, years and years in the making. So every one of the athletes that was affected, you know, has a pretty heartbreaking story about, you know, not getting closure to something that they worked really hard for.
Well, speaking of not getting closure, I mean, Greg, can we make a case that the KU Jayhawks, the number one men's basketball team in the nation, isn't going to get closure on a season that held so much promise? A lot of people expecting an NCAA championship here.
A mythical championship,
A mythical championship, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
harkening back to the day.
That's yeah, right. When it was common in football before the playoff and the BCS and what have you. But, yeah, I mean, they were in a position to be the overall number one seed in this tournament, and this was when the madness, so to speak, was ready to begin, and then all of a sudden it was just swept away because of the corona, you know, the virus, and it's mind-boggling for me to sit here and think, you know, I should be on the road somewhere today covering a tournament game or getting ready to cover some tournament games, and it's just not there.
How much regret, Greg, is Coach Bill Self expressing at this moment on a season, again, that held so much potential for that team?
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of regret, not only, you know, with Bill Self, but all those who felt that they had a chance just to get into the tournament. because, I mean, it was there for the taking, and a lot of people thought that they were going to be part of that 68-team field, besides the ones who got the automatic berths already. But, you know, it's one of those things that's out of their control, and they can't disagree with the decisions that have been made because it is for public health, but that's the way it is.
And yet, Vahe, for those players, this has got to be absolutely crushing.
Absolutely, and picture, you know, players like Udoka Azubuike, who's all of his career was going to culminate in this, and he's been through so much, so many ups and downs and crazy things, and it there's a chance to have the capstone project, for lack of a better term, on it, and
that's right,
and that's just all just sort of faded out and just rapidly faded out. I can't imagine the feeling of just this evaporation of these things for everybody. And really, when I say that, I am thinking a lot about those seniors in general at high school or college level, all these people. One thing, somebody pointed this out to me the other day, and this is kind of interesting way to frame it. High school seniors right now are the 911 babies, right? I mean, they came into this world around September 11th, and their high school careers are ending in this pandemic.
Right.
I mean, it's temporary. Let's assume that, and this is a phase of their lives. But it certainly is something to think about when you picture that they're going to be deprived of things that maybe they're luxuries, if we look at it that way.
Yeah.
Graduation, proms, but those are rites of passage too.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you know, and Greg, I can't help but reflect too for this KU team, that program up against so much controversy right now with the NCAA investigation. This was the grand distraction from
sure.
all that, and now that's gone.
No question. And almost as part of the natural process, I'm sure a lot of this discussion now moving forward as it pertains to KU is going to be what is the state of that investigation, even
yeah.
though nothing may be determined for several months. That question will prevail through the next few months.
Yeah. Marlia Campbell, I'm wondering about one of the seniors that maybe you've profiled over in Topeka and how that individual is handling this disappointment to see a season evaporate before his or her eyes here.
Sure. Yeah, we talked to Tayshawn Goodwin, who is a track athlete at Emporia State, who's gearing up to do really well at nationals. You know, and this was a long time in the making, and he's a senior. And granted, we actually interviewed him the day that the NCAA announced spring athletes would get some eligibility relief for the next year. So when we talked to him, you know, he thought his career was over. Turns out, you know, he could be looking at another year coming up here. But he was crying in the interview. You know, it hit him at the time, and this means a lot. Not to just, I think we sometimes might forget about the sports like track and, you know, lacrosse, and kind of March Madness is the center of this right now. But, you know, it hits everyone extremely hard. So yeah, Tayshawn Goodwin was a heartbreaking interview. Granted, good news to come after we talked to him, but because this is just rapidly changing every single minute, it feels like. But
any sense, Marlia, how's he gonna handle this? I mean, how does anyone process news like this?
You know, again, with the eligibility relief, that is a silver lining, but
right.
you know, you've worked hard for this year, and this is right here in this moment. So, you know, every athlete we've talked to is looking at it the same way, which is this was 100% the right decision. You know, and no one we've talked to has argued that, obviously for the greater good of public health, but that doesn't take away how painful this moment is for, you know, something you invest your life in to have kind of suddenly taken away.
You know, Vahe, I think Marlia just makes a great point. You know, this notion that, you know, these athletes come along and now we've moved on to a different phase in our society. But to her point, these folks have worked so hard and so long to get to this moment in their lives, and then puff. It's no small deal.
No small deal. And I've been struck by the empathy, generosity, however you want to frame it, of a lot of the people that are in this position. You know, Whit Merrifield out at spring training told reporters the other day that he gets that it's beyond him, well beyond him. It's not about his health. It's about those they could affect. And I think by and large, we've really seen that be the prevailing wave of how all these people in these positions have seen it, whether it's Dayton Moore, Bill Self. Bill's talked about the hurt they have, but he also has absolutely been conscious of the big picture. I spoke the other day with Jaden Cox, who is an Olympic wrestler from Columbia, Missouri, as smart and passionate and competitive a guy as there is. And Jaden had, I thought, fantastic perspective on this, talking about that this is the world uniting against a common enemy. Mm-hmm. And that he first of all, hopes that that could have some staying power. But the point being that that's the call here. It's not about you. It's about your role as a link in the chain.
Yeah. Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date special coverage, coronavirus in Kansas City. We're talking with some sports reporters about what in the world are they covering at this time, given the big change in the world in their individual team sports seasons. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Greg Eklund, Vahe just mentioned the Kansas City Royals and Whit Merrifield. There's some news today that the season could resume when. What are you seeing out there in terms of bringing baseball back and some salvation for the rest of the world here?
I don't think a start date has been set yet.
They're looking at May, I'm seeing, that possibly for a start now?
Perhaps. But there was no definite start date. And I also saw that there was actually no contingency plan announced as to what they'll do with the games that had been missed from early April until this possible May date that you're mentioning. I'm sure there are a lot of considerations within the offices of Major League Baseball, but they have not announced any start date officially, no announced on any contingency plans. And for the fans' sake, that have bought tickets to regular season games, there have been no announcements on refund policies for the games that have been purchased.
Yeah. Marlee, I'm thinking, is there a sliver of good news here for the Kansas City Royals? I mean, maybe the team avoids another 100-loss season by all of this.
Yeah, gosh. Maybe a small silver lining, but I'm sure, you know, everyone's ready to get back out there.
Yeah.
Steve,
yeah.
If I can interject
please
real quick. One thing that could play favorably for the Royals here, for instance, is they're still waiting for Mondesi to get healthier. And some things like that, it's such a speck on the broader landscape. I think we're all going to have to learn to take heart in little things in some ways. And
yeah.
So if you are thinking about the Royal season on this day where the world is shutting down, that's a thing to think about.
Yeah.
And I think if you don't mind, I'll just quick elaborate on another point that I've had in mind. You know, one of the things we're all gonna have to balance in sports media and maybe media in general is this question. It might be tone deaf to be talking about things like that, right? It might be tone deaf to get into this stuff right now with this right in our face. At the same time, I think people are going to need some relief and need some distraction.
That's right.
And so one of the dilemmas we're talking about at the start, and I'm sure it's something Greg has considered, is, you know, we have things in our notebooks that might be, that were and are, I think, interesting things to write that were going to be written this week and next. And sort of figuring out the timing of the deployment of those now, if it's a different story off coronavirus,
right,
then when do we use that? And I think that's going to be an evolving situation for many news outlets.
And this situation actually is so much different than, you know, when before we were even born during World War II, there was a lot of rallying cries at that time from everything that I've read. But all sports continued. The game of baseball continued. It was a watered-down product because of the men and women who were at war at that time. But the game continued as a salvation point and something for everybody to look to as a positive. This is so different because everything has grounded to a halt. So it's up to individuals like Vahe and Marlee and others to find those stories that provide those kinds of silver linings since there are no games being played.
Yeah. Marlee, to that point, any sense of where you're going in the days and in the next couple of weeks to come? Any stories that you have percolating that you'd want to share with us?
Yeah, you know, it's tough day by day. As we were saying a week ago, you know, we were expecting to cover the NCAA tournament, and that kind of drastically changed day by day. So it's very much on our toes. But I know tonight we're talking to the Topeka High girls basketball team, who is one of just two undefeated teams still in 6A. You know, so for them, this week was a national championship, and they have seniors who, you know, in high school, you don't get an extra year of eligibility. You know, so we're talking to them tonight. Just those kind of stories throughout the week.
Yeah. Jeff asks us on Twitter here, although a horse of a different color, the latest WWE matches without audiences have been very unique, he writes. Any chance for high-level sports being played without a crowd, Greg? I think the answer is no, right? Because of the danger of infection.
I'm thinking that I saw the last games played over the weekend when the Missouri State High School basketball tournament tried to continue, and then after they won their sectionals at Blue Springs South, the Activities Association came out with the statement yesterday that that's it, we're shutting it down. There is no final. So I think I may have seen the last game played over the weekend.
I was going to say, Vahe, hasn't Rudy Gobert of the Utah Jazz, his infection, hasn't that sort of ended that conversation about any games being played at any level at any time?
I think so, abruptly, starkly, you know, immediately. And I think our friend and colleague Bruce Arthur in Toronto wrote about him as the accidental hero, sort of a little buffoonery to it in a way, mm-hmm. right? I mean, and yet not entirely out of bounds in the sense that don't you think most people were kind of treating it as, ha-ha, it's at a distance, not going to happen to us. And then he was kind of goofing around with it. And that
putting his hands on reporters' phones and making a big show of it. Yeah.
Yep. And on teammates' things and things like that, kind of, you know, there's no excuse for what he did, except for there is an excuse for what he did. He didn't get it.
Yeah, right.
and I think it, oddly enough, again, was one of those quirky kind of rotten things that actually in the end is going to be shown to have been a helpful thing, because it absolutely was the catalyst for the NBA.
And for the record, he's made a big donation now, I think, on behalf of testing or something, to atone for his sins here in a way.
He has, I think, something like $500,000. And I think he's been also out there as a sort of public face of this. And you know, I applaud him for that. It'd be easy to do it differently after that, right? We've seen people go into shells when they've done something they regret.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, Marlia, do you think this is all going to result in a greater appreciation in our society for sports and what sports bring us as a consequence of not being able to access sports right now?
For sure. You know, I mean, they say you don't know what you got till it's gone, right? And I don't think any of us kind of obviously saw this coming. But I think it is, to Greg's point, you know, we've never really had this moment where this is totally kind of taken away. And sports is what brings us all together. And to kind of lose this is tough. But again, to Greg's point, you know, sharing those stories and making sure we have sports kind of in a different outlet, I think is critical during this time.
Greg?
Yeah, I would agree. I think, as I'll repeat what I had said earlier, the stories are out there. There are plenty of stories to be told. Vahe's been someone who's been involved in Olympic coverage, and I think of the impact this has on those athletes who are trying for something, a moment of glory once every 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the time that they're training for it. And a lot of the training for Olympic Games have been shut down. And so that's been thrown off the rails. So there are still a lot of things to be determined. We've already had the Masters called off. The PGA Championship's been moved up to the month of May. That may be called off. The Kentucky Derby has already been called off. The NFL says it's still going to have the draft in Las Vegas.
But without an audience.
But without an audience and all the public events in conjunction with that. We're going to have that here in Kansas City in a few years. And I know members of the Kansas City Sports Commission wanted to go to Las Vegas to observe what was going on.
Yeah.
But there's not going to be much to observe out there.
Marlee, I'm wondering how coronavirus has changed or at least affected how you do your job every day. Has it at all, or any personnel changes at the station, any different way you go about reporting your stories?
Yeah, I mean, we're going day by day, just being really careful with, we have a lot of equipment that we share. Obviously, being a TV station, we have tripods and microphones and cameras, so we're being very careful about wiping stuff down, you know, wiping our keyboards down. We share station cars. So we're being extremely careful. And again, those conversations are being had day by day, because a couple days ago looked a lot different than it does now. So we're continuing, you know, to take those close measures. But it's tough doing a job where a large part of it is, you know, going out and doing interviews and getting out in the community and stuff. So we're scaling back and we're taking that away. You know, we're not doing in-person stuff. And it's a challenging time, and it's changing the way we do things a lot.
Fahey, what are you seeing out there? How's it changing your world?
Well, it's interesting. I've still got a couple in-person things lined up. And I don't know if when I leave the studio if those people will change their minds. I feel like my understanding of this, which could be not a clear enough understanding, is that if I indeed keep the social distance and do something I hate doing, which is not shaking hands and such, that it's okay to do it. I may be wrong. I may be hearing from the World Health Organization and the CDC immediately after I make these comments, but or Mayor Lucas, if he's listening. So, but that's the approach I'm taking. Until I'm told otherwise, until it's insisted otherwise, or something kicks in that tells me, oh, you're just so wrong on this. So, and I guess the real point of that is also others so far are willing to do it. One person, though, I'm not trying to be secretive, but I'm just not sure if it's going to work out. Said he had to check with the medical authorities before he could say yes to me coming to see him. So, or him coming to see us. So. That's the kind of thing that's up in the air right now.
Yeah. How about you, Greg?
Same boat. I'm supposed to talk with an individual here shortly, and we're going to do it by phone because there are a lot of offices around town that are also closed, and people are working remotely. And I would prefer to be in person and do the interview in person and have the eye contact and talk to that individual, but with respect to their position, I'm doing probably more phone interviews than I normally wish to do at this time.
We haven't talked about the Kansas City Chiefs here, and one of the big questions is, will the Chiefs sign quarterback Pat Mahomes to that huge contract this offseason, or is that going to wind up waiting for whatever reason? Fahey, what's any sense of what the latest thinking there is?
Well, my sense is that everybody's eager to get it done, but nobody has to jump at it. There's time. My sense also is that to whatever degree they have been allowed to or not allowed to, get on this case, it's been going on behind the scenes for months. I don't think it's like, okay, now you can start working on it. Clearly, it's in the Chiefs' best interest. It's in Patrick's best interest. The passing of the collective bargaining agreement, I think, clears the way also. So I certainly would not expect it to happen within a week or two, but I'd be surprised if it goes more than a couple more months.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to leave our conversation there. That was the voice of Fahey Gregorian, a sports columnist for the Kansas City Star. Marlia Campbell, sports director for WIBW-TV, joined us via Skype from her home in Topeka. Also with us again, Greg Eklund, cover sports for KCUR. Thank you all very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, keep going. Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, Gina Kaufman just joined us here in the studio to preview what's coming up in her half of the show today. Gina, good morning.
Hi, Steve. Yeah, the digital divide is on our agenda. In light of schools and businesses closing, the internet is serving as a real lifeline, and we are thinking about all those families without access to that lifeline at home.
Okay, now's the time to start calling 816-235-2888 with your personal concerns about just that, staying connected while everything else is shut down. 816-235-2888. And just a quick note, tomorrow on the show, we open up the phone lines and we'll be taking your questions about this very fast-moving story with a panel of experts aimed at answering them. That's tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date and special coverage, Coronavirus in Kansas City.
I'm Gina Kaufman, bringing you the second half of Up to Date special coverage, Coronavirus in KC. Steve Kraske and I are bringing this live coverage to you every weekday from 9 to 10 a.m. It is Tuesday, March 17th. St. Patrick's Day parades are off. Schools are closed. Workplaces are closed. Gatherings of more than 10 people are now banned in KCMO and KCK. We've all been urged to stay home. That means telecommuting, online schoolwork, virtual hanging out, and Netflix galore if you have internet connectivity in your home. Those who don't have the gadgetry and internet access they need to get through this are missing a vital lifeline. That's what we're talking about now. Call 816-235-2888 to join the conversation. We'll be taking those calls as we go. 816-235-2888. My in-studio guests are Tom Esselman of Connecting for Good, a nonprofit that does a lot of work on closing the digital divide. They are doing what they can to provide resources to Kansas Cityans now more than ever. Tom, good morning.
Good morning.
Katie Booty is with us as well. She's here from the Lean Lab, an education think tank in Kansas City. She's going to bring perspective on what this means for access to education in particular. Something to consider on this first day of no school for 14 metro districts per the emergency measures Mayor Lucas issued yesterday evening. Katie, hello.
Hello, good morning.
So that's a mouthful of news, guys. We are going to be hearing from a national guest very shortly, but let's start with Kansas City. Katie, what do we know about the school closures, first of all?
Yeah, well, many of you saw the announcement late yesterday that we are officially out of school until April 3rd, with school resuming the Monday of April 5th is what we know for right now.
Is access to online learning across economic and racial divides something that education insiders like yourself are talking about right now?
Yes, very much so. We've had the pleasure of being able to connect with multiple school administrators over the last few days. And the primary concern is, how do we assess what the tech needs are at home to move to remote learning, as well as just access to basic social services, food insecurity, home insecurity, those types of things are of top concern.
Is there like a plan to address it, or is that evolving?
That's evolving. I mean, I think something that we've talked about on the show before is something that's unique about Kansas City is how fragmented our local public school landscape is. We have 14 public school districts and 20 plus charter schools just in Kansas City, Missouri boundaries alone. That means that we have...
And that's not even taking the private schools into account. That's
And each one of those school systems has their own board, their own superintendent, their own protocols, their own procedures, and their own differing resources when it comes to access to technology and basic infrastructure. So that means you have the potential for a lot of duplicative efforts. That means we have some lack of coordination. But ultimately, what's really challenging right now is that means that we have some that are really shining stars that have been really proactive and have great plans, and some that are just now assessing the needs of their school communities. So there's disparity there, and we're trying to figure out how do we work smarter and share what's worked really great for some school districts with others that are in need right now.
I'm hearing that some school districts with individual laptops for students in the classroom were considering sending those home, but some really couldn't do that because they often have like a cart stocked with lots of laptops and one charger.
Yeah, what we heard, quite frankly, what I heard from several administrators yesterday in a Zoom call that we had was, some school districts, Shawnee Mission, several other school districts around and like Missouri side as well, sent kids proactively home with a tech stack at the end of before spring break, because remember this week is spring break, so kids were not anticipated to be in school. But just proactively, school districts that could said, hey, here are some tech resources, let us know if you need a hotspot, we're ready to go. However, some schools didn't know what was going to happen, and what we heard is that they don't have a running assessment of what tech looks like at home for families. So we're needing to assess very quickly what schools have internet connectivity at home or not. Charter schools and other schools that are one-to-one actually haven't rolled out what it means to take those technology tools home. So there's also a question of just basic protocol. You know, what does it mean if there's one charger? What does it mean to make sure families are really equipped if they take the laptop or iPad home? Do they have connectivity? Do we have just a basic integrate? Are we using an integrated software system so kids can understand, have a centralized place to get resources, so on and so forth. So those are kind of questions that people are asking.
What about teachers? Because that's not a profession known for hefty paychecks. Mm-hmm. Are they equipped to teach online from home by and large?
I mean, it's a mixed bag again. Some have been doing this for months. There are a lot of what we are grateful for is that internationally, many teachers have been teaching remotely for a few weeks now. So, and teachers are great community builders. So there's a lot of Facebook pages, a lot of Twitter threads of teachers sharing resources, YouTube videos of what they've done, websites of what they've done, so on and so forth. However, I would say that the what happened was most schools told teachers to prepare packets to go home. So you have a lot of like just put together as many resources and lesson plans as you can, worksheets, et cetera, in lieu of not knowing what's going to happen digitally and push those out. I think educators are just now, I mean, the announcement came yesterday for everybody, right?
Yeah.
So there is a lot of unknowns of just what do we do with that? They knew it was a possibility, but now that it's becoming real and for how long, you know, is this 3 weeks that I'm figuring out or 2 weeks that I'm figuring out, or is this eight? Is this the new normal? You know, there's a lot of that ambiguity that folks are reconciling.
Okay, Katie Booty, stick with me. We're going to turn now to Tom Esselman. Tom, what are you most concerned about expanding beyond education?
Well, this has really been an interesting time for us. The topic there, the I guess word that we use to describe this situation for the last 8 years is we call it digital inclusion, making sure people who typically lack access to tech get access to it. That's not been a very popular or well-understood topic, and now all of a sudden it's in the spotlight. So Connecting for Good has been around to make sure that communities that lack access get affordable internet, computers, and digital skills to use them. And we can only achieve that by being part of a larger network of support resources. So there actually is a group that's been around in Kansas City for 5 years. It's the Kansas City Coalition for Digital Inclusion. It's headed up by the public library, and it includes a broad array of resources that are typically available for people who don't have internet at home. Right now, with gatherings being prohibited, even the library branches being closed, Connecting for Good has stepped up its effort to make available resources for families that need to get affordable internet, computers, and digital skills.
Yeah, tell me about some of what you're doing. I've seen some of the planned programming, although I'm not sure how the gatherings needing to be smaller than 10 is affecting those plans, but you had some things planned even for today.
Right. We've already adjusted our plans for today. Basically, we have two sites in Kansas City, Missouri, one at the Linwood campus at 71 Highway and Linwood Boulevard, and the other at our warehouse in the West Bottoms. And in both cases, we will provide discounted Wi-Fi hotspots, free and low-cost computers, but we're doing it by appointment only. And you would just simply need to go to our website or email us at info@connectingforgood.org or call us at 816-559-7077. And I'll provide this later, too, if I have an opportunity. But also, you can go on the digitalinclusionkc.org website. That's digitalinclusionkc.org.
I mean, the irony here is that if you have this problem, you might not be able to go get on that, website or
that
send that
ironic.
Email.
Well, what we're looking for is both people who have resources to provide, because I think the key thing is here, thanks to shows like this, we're actually, ironically, able to generate much greater awareness of this issue than when there's not a crisis. So if you have resources to provide, examples, the Federal Reserve Bank, Google Fiber, Greater Kansas City LISC, they've all contacted us to provide helpful resources to make devices and internet access more available. If you are a neighborhood association or a church group or work with groups that have Wi-Fi enabled buildings, making those spaces available, albeit in a cautious and safe way, is still the type of outreach we need to do to provide help at a time when a lot of families both need and lack the access.
So jumping in just to say that the White House is holding its latest briefing on coronavirus this morning. KCUR will provide NPR's live special coverage beginning at 10:30. That's at 10:30 this morning. We're going to continue this conversation right now about the digital divide in Kansas City and how that is affecting people maybe more profoundly than usual, but not necessarily differently than usual here in Kansas City during the coronavirus issue. Tom, there have been some emergency measures put in place to get people connected even if they can't afford it. Tell me about those.
Well, first of all, it starts with the major internet service providers, the ISPs. Great example is Spectrum. Right now, if you have a student living at home, you can call Spectrum. I don't have their number right offhand, and they'll provide free internet access for you at home. If you don't have a computer device to take advantage of that, that's hopefully where we come in. Either of our two locations, we have desktop computers that are equipped with the Linux operating system. We give away 5 of those free each day. And other desktop.
You give away 5 computers a day.
Yep. And anything with Windows operating system, Windows 10, depending on the speed and memory, are priced between $30, $50, or $100. And laptops are also $100. We also give away 3 laptops each week. We've got a growing capacity to do that. Last year, we were able to acquire the old Surplus Exchange warehouse in the West Bottoms. So we also do electronics recycling for people and organizations who donate computer equipment to us.
You know, I want to ask, just getting back to the emergency measures put in place by major internet companies, I've heard that in the fine print there are caveats about households with outstanding balances owed to these companies not qualifying for these services. Is that correct?
It would be hard for me to answer that in a broad, sweeping way because it does vary by provider. In the Kansas City region in particular, AT&T, Spectrum are the two largest providers. They do have different programs and different conditions. I don't want to speak directly for each of them. Google Fiber has been a real champion for digital inclusion in the greater Kansas City area for 8 years. I would just urge anyone to reach out directly to those companies, let them know your situation. And right now in particular, all of those organizations are doing whatever they can to help.
There's more to the digital divide than technical access, though. There's a significant hurdle that's literacy. Can you talk about that piece of it?
Sure. Again, being part of a coalition, groups like Literacy KC and the Public Library go out of their way to blend, and as does Connecting for Good, to blend the idea of technology access with the importance of having a kind of a open and warm and welcoming approach to teaching people who don't even know sometimes how to use a mouse or the difference between different keystrokes on a keyboard. So we really take seriously the term digital literacy as it pertains to just the importance of giving people an on-ramp to being technically literate.
What are the cultural factors that create such a disparity when it comes to digital literacy? Because I will just acknowledge that in the communities I personally travel in, this is a kind of literacy that many take for granted. But I do understand that that's not the case across the board.
If you grow up in areas, and back up real quick, you hear the term digital divide oftentimes. And across the country, more often than not, that refers to rural areas that are just separated by large geographic distances. But in urban areas, the digital divide usually has to do with racial and economic lines, areas where households just simply have not been able to afford access to home broadband. And so their experience being on the internet is usually with a cell phone or a smartphone with limited data. So when it comes to doing resumes and school reports and working with greater data, that's kind of hard to do on a smartphone. So now when you're forced to do all your work and your schooling remotely, it really calls out the need for not only broadband internet, but a device, a laptop or a desktop computer system.
I want to turn to Linda Poon for more on that. She's a staff writer for CityLab, and she's written quite recently that we have underestimated the number of Americans who are without internet access. So this is a national issue as well as a local one. Linda, hello.
Hi. How are you guys?
Pretty good. You say there are more Americans on the other side of the digital divide than we once thought. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, so my story was basically about a report by Broadband Now, which works with internet service providers, and they basically came out with a report that says the figures of Americans who lack high-speed internet access is double what the FCC says. So the Federal Commission the Federal Communications Commission says 21 million Americans, according to this report, 21 million Americans lack broadband access. But when they sort of cross-check that with a sample of internet service providers and a sample of addresses, their conclusion was that actually the number may be as high as 42 million. So that's a lot of underestimation by the federal government.
What accounts for that underestimation?
Yeah, so the way the Federal Communications Commission sort of counts that number is there's something called Form 477, which basically internet service providers self-report where they provide access and where they don't. And the problem with that is that these providers can say they provide access to an entire census tract if they provide access to one house in that census tract, which in a sense, you know, it sort of makes sense in like an urban landscape, right, where houses are densely packed together. But in rural areas, that becomes an even larger problem because houses are spread apart. So while you have one house that's able to get wire access, a house next door, maybe a couple miles away, don't. And so you're miscounting a lot of people, or you're undercounting a lot of people.
You are also, like Tom, dispelling the myth that this is a rural versus urban issue. You wrote this article pretty recently, but things have evolved fast with COVID-19, and that really wasn't part of the article. And I'm curious about that urban-rural myth, first of all, and then how COVID-19 and urban environments combined with this gap in digital access, like, what does that particular storm look like to you?
Yeah, so about the myth, it's really easy to understand why people think of it as such a rural problem. But as Tom said, it is an urban problem as well. And in fact, one study by the Brookings Institute actually found that more people in urban areas lack access to broadband compared to rural, but they really stress that it's not a rural versus urban problem. It's on both sides. So what that means is that, especially with business shutting down and school closures, you have students in cities who don't have access to cities like New York, which has the largest public school system, who don't have access to a computer, and they should not be overlooked. And at the same time, as rural areas also shut down schools, it's going to be a problem for the residents there.
Katie Booty, jump in here because you've been listening for a while, and I wonder what you think of what you're hearing through the lens of the education landscape in Kansas City.
In terms of connectivity.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the scariest thing is that we just don't know. Like, what I was talking to schools, what we're trying to work on right now is putting together and partnering with others, like the library and Connecting for Good, to put together an assessment for educators to actually understand the level of connectivity and school homes. What I heard from multiple administrators yesterday is that we need to have individual conversations with each family to understand exactly what's going on.
It's wow, one thing. That is a lot of families.
It's a lot of families. And there's also a need, like to Tom's point, we do have access to resources. Spectrum's offering these resources. Connecting for Good has devices. The library has multiple connectivity options. But we don't have a cohesive way to distribute, and we don't have a cohesive way to assess what the need actually is.
You know, something that comes to mind for me that we've talked about on this show before, covered a lot on this station, is that attendance is a particular issue in Kansas City's public schools. And not only attendance, but what they call churn, where even just like what might seem like a minor in comparison to a pandemic disruption in a family's life can cause a student to really fall through the cracks in the system and fall off the face of the map in some ways. Yeah. Are you worried about that here?
Yeah, actually, that was one of the first concerns that was. So we opened up an educator forum on our website and have been getting inbound requests, and that was one of the first ones that came in. The state has said, okay, hey, we're going to be really flexible and offer a moratorium in terms of attendance. Many may not know this. Schools actually get paid per what's called average daily attendance, or ADA. So they actually receive their funding based on how many children are actually going to school every single day and how they quantify that. Now, obviously, this is an unprecedented time. time. So the state is giving a lot of flexibility around that and has already said that they're removing the attendance requirement from APR, which is the annual way schools are assessed for their accreditation. That being said, I mean, I was on this phone with a school administrator yesterday that was like, but it's still important to know if kids are actually logging in and getting access to these remote learning tools. There are ways that the state and other states before us have advised on taking digital attendance. Internationally, schools have had like mandated login times, like we need to see that you're logged in to your through your student ID by 8:30 in the morning. But there really is that it's not required here in the state of Missouri. B, we don't really know how that functionally actually looks like. So yes, we can ask all kids to try to connect via Seesaw or some device or some platform by 8:30 a.m. But if we don't know if they have internet, if we don't know what kind of devices they have at home, if we don't know the level of interaction, engagement,
the availability of their parents to be monitoring that, or that digital literacy piece of that for their parents.
Right. It's really scary because I do think there's an opportunity for this to perpetuate inequities. What we do know, I was doing some deep diving on just pandemic, the impact of prior pandemics on learning outcomes for kids, and not to be alarmist, but what we do know about the Spanish flu is that it did cause like a generational dip of children that had lower educational attainment, and that had socioeconomic impacts for an entire generation. So we know that this is true. We know it's important that we have kids equipped with educational materials, that it's important to assess how frequently they're able to engage with those, but the actual coordinated effort to make sure that that can happen coherently and in a coordinated way is really challenging.
This is also something that occurs to me, is that if students are, you know, if there's some sort of trauma in a community, there's disparity in this too, but schools generally try to provide emotional support immediately at school via counselors, et cetera. This could be very traumatic for many students, and that safety net for them isn't there. Mm-hmm. Has there been talk about that? Or is that just getting too far past that logistical piece?
That's just period. When school's in session, social emotional learning resources and a way to combat trauma is one of our highest needs in this region, if not nationwide. Now compound that with what's going on right now. You know, we've tried our best. Like I said, we've been curating tools on our website. We have a resource list. We do have a section for social emotional learning tools. And there's a dearth of real dynamic social emotional tools that can go remote and help families navigate this. You know, that's just where we're at. But again, I do think there's an opportunity for us to find some sort of coordinated effort to come together as school system leaders, as nonprofit providers, and say, how do we share what we know does work quickly, efficiently, and figure out ways to distribute?
Could there be a developmental gap when you're looking at older students who might have more ability to self-direct, because the kind of learning they do in the classroom might be a little bit more like, there's a lecture, I'm taking my notes. Mm-hmm. Whereas younger kids, I have a very small child at home, and he's not school age yet, but he's not far. And it's just hard to imagine him 2 years from now being able to sit himself down in front of a computer and sit still and all of those things.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. It's like, we know that even the best educational technology tools does not replace human connection and instruction, right? I mean, it just doesn't. And one of the biggest things I heard universally from school administrators yesterday was exactly that. Like, there's a big difference between my K-3 kiddos and my grades 4 and beyond kiddos who can sit down, take instruction, take notes, read potential, like, you know, like self-direct versus our littles who, you know, need a lot more interaction in their learning environment. So that's a key concern. But I think, again, it's like, how do we, if we can find ways to communicate with families, to share best practices, to understand what the need is at home, then we can begin creating interventions that are more dynamic.
Tom Esselman of Connecting for Good, I want to come back to you, and just in case we have some listeners who have joined this conversation since the last time you shared it, where can Kansas Cityans turn for help getting access to the computers, laptops, gadgets that they need, and also help with internet connectivity in their homes right now?
Right. So affordable internet, free and low-cost computers and mentoring and digital skills help, you can find by going to connectingforgood.org's website. You can email us at info@connectingforgood.org. You could visit either of our two sites, 3210 Michigan Avenue in Kansas City, Missouri, or 518 Santa Fe in the West Bottoms. And most importantly, we're urging anyone, if you have resources to offer or if you have questions about things that you need, go to digitalinclusionkc.org.
There or ask a friend to do it for you.
Or ask a friend to do it for you. If you, I know it's all web-based. If you know someone who is in need, make sure that you direct them to one of our sites or just have them call us at 816-559-7077.
Our time is up. Tom Esselman and Katie Booty, thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
Thanks
Linda,
so much.
Linda Poon of CityLab, thanks for making yourself available as well.
Thank you.
Tom Esselman joined us from Connecting for Good, and Katie Booty joined us from the Lean Lab. I'm Gina Kaufman. Steve Kraske and I will be here again tomorrow at 9 with up-to-date special coverage, coronavirus in KC. You can stay on top of all the news between now and then by listening to this station or checking out our coronavirus blog, kcur.org. The reporters are here updating that in real time. Be safe, everyone.